thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast. This is episode 40, posting on the 25th of June, 2021. I'm your host, Conal O'Moran. We have a very special edition of That Great Business Show for you this week. We always get a hugely positive response when we have Dr. Yolanta Burke, assistant professor at the Department of Education at Maynooth University, on the show. That's because Dr. Jo, that's what we like to call her, is the no-nonsense doctor of positive psychology. Like you, we don't encourage bull or fluff. So when we first met with Dr. Jo many years ago now, we struck a deal. Anything and everything she says has to be peer-reviewed. In other words, it's proper science. And it's what she does anyway, so she was happy to oblige. We are leaving COVID behind us, and the podcast team thought it was a very good idea to have Dr. Jo talk to us about what psychological damage has been done during COVID and how best to prepare for life after COVID. Stay listening, because you will find the next 45 minutes or so very, very helpful, not just for you, for your family, but also for your business. And that's what we do best. We back your business. And that's what our sponsor, DeFacto Shaving Oil, does too. You're hearing Ireland's best business podcast thanks to their backing. In return, please back DeFacto by buying the world's best shaving oil and ditching the dirty, polluting shaving foam. DeFactoShave.com.
That Great Business Show.
Dr. Burke, welcome back to That Great Business Show.
Thank you so much for having me, as usual.
I hope you don't mind me calling you Dr. Jo.
I love being called Dr. Jo.
Because you think you're in a sitcom in the States or something.
It's just always been. Whenever I come on your show, I'm always Dr. Jo, and I love it. It's just something different. It's as if I were putting on a different suit of clothes or something.
I have just told you that I have left my phone behind me, and you told me that that is one of the great anxieties of this age.
That's right. And there is actually research about this, that we do get quite anxious without our phones. We are just so used to it.
So you now have to talk me off the ledge.
Well, hopefully you'll be so into it, in such flow, that you won't even think about your phone.
So talk to me about COVID, and what has COVID done to us as a nation generally, mentally?
I think that it has affected everyone differently. And I always struggle to give this sweeping statement about it, because I've seen people who have been thriving through COVID. Many people have actually. And this is one of the most surprising pieces of research that I have read. This was a study, a huge study. 78 countries participated in it. Ireland was there too. And they showed that very significant percentage of people, despite COVID, despite the lockdowns and all of the limitations that we had to go through, they have experienced flourishing. And flourishing, this is the highest level of well-being. So for some people, the impact of COVID was actually feeling okay or even great. But there were also people who have suffered through COVID, and they were the people who perhaps have been quite vulnerable before COVID. Maybe they've experienced a little bit lower levels of well-being. Maybe they already started experiencing one or two symptoms of depression, and COVID could have perhaps pushed them into this mental illness zone. And there were also some people who perhaps, because of their jobs or circumstances, maybe they've lost their job, were also affected negatively by it. So it's really a mixed bag.
Well, I am one of the people who actually like it. I like being alone. I like being on my own. And it has actually been no problem at all to me. I absolutely and completely understand what you are saying about so many more. And it has been tough. Now, you told me offline, as we say in the business, that this has meant that we have learnt resilience or built resilience. Talk to me about, first of all, what is resilience and why is it a good thing?
Resilience is this a concept that everybody mentions, but very few people actually know what it really means. And I suppose whenever I talk to people about resilience, they are very surprised to find out that the vast majority of us are really resilient. So research is showing us that around 70 to 97% of people who experience very serious adversity, traumatic events in their lives, bounce back from it within about 2 years. Some of them actually experience growth either at the same time or afterwards. So what I mean by at the same time is that sometimes we may struggle through some experiences in life, like COVID. We may be going through bereavement, or a lot of people struggle, for example, having to homeschool their children and work full time. Yet despite maybe experiencing some negative effects of the struggle, they also start recognizing that they have grown as people. The research that I've carried out with a colleague of mine from Maynooth University, Dr. Magella Dempsey, is showing us that 8 out of 10 people that we've surveyed experienced at least one symptom of growth within 8 months of COVID. So we were right in the middle of the struggles, and they already recognized that they have grown.
And what does grown mean to you?
So growth is about... for example, appreciating our life much more. So there are situations, like everyday life situations, when we just get on with life that we don't stop and think. And that appreciation of life comes when something big and nasty happens in our lives. And then we realize, oh God, I really appreciate what I have. I never realized, like what so many people were saying, gosh, I never realized how wonderful it was to just go out for a cup of coffee to the local coffee shop. The moment it was gone, it was taken away from us. We actually wanted it so much more. So that appreciation for life when so many people were dying is so important. And many people have experienced this. In addition to this, we also noticed that a lot of people became very close to other people. So that they've realized that they have friends around that they never thought they were close with. So even work colleagues started creating WhatsApp groups during COVID, and they have got to know each other much better, maybe on a more personal level. In addition to getting closer to people, we've also had a lot of people saying that they've never realized how strong they were mentally to go through this adversity, support others, and they were able to just get through it. So these are some of the symptoms of growth.
It's interesting that you say about the two-year bounce back, because what little I know about psychology, I also know I'm forever hoping to win the lotto, but I'm told that my happiness would only last roughly, again, 18 months to 2 years. Is there something about that time frame that 2 years seems to wash us out or wash through us or something?
Yes, spot on. You're spot on, because the two events are very much related to each other. And what they are related by is the adaptability. So we adapt to our circumstances. Regardless if they're good or bad, we tend to adapt to them. Some of us adapt faster to them. Some of us adapt a little bit slower. But usually within about 2 years, even if there were some positive events happening in our lives, we would get back to the usual kind of level within 2 years. You get married, you get a boost after marriage, and then it goes it goes down again to the levels that you started. There are some events that perhaps persist, like, for example, having children lowers your well-being initially for a few years. And then when they reach about 5-6 years old, it starts going up again. So there are some events that perhaps persist, and they create a little bit different type of adaptation. So we still bounce back. We still start looking at benefits that we can find within the changed circumstances. And it may take just slightly different space of time, but most of us are really resilient.
Now, as you know, this is That Great Business Show. The emphasis, therefore, is on business. How can we, post-COVID, and please, 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 I hope it's gone or going, how can we hang on to all the good bits that we've learned, such as resilience, such as being friends with our work colleagues that you just mentioned, all of the above. How do you hang on to that and not see it disappear in 2 years?
That's the big question. And I love the way you've used the word hang on, because that's exactly what we do when we are trying to engage with well-being activities. Adaptation happens all the time, the positive adaptation, adaptation to positive events. So if we introduce activities on a regular basis that allow us to keep this feeling going, it's much better for us. Just going back to business before I go into these activities. There is some very interesting research even showing that some people very much need excitement at work. And when they don't get it, they keep swapping their positions or jobs on a frequent basis. But very soon they adapt again and they go to the next job and the next job. And one particular research even identified people in certain groups. There are some people that change within a year and other groups of people change within 2 years, 5 years or 10 years. Sorry, after 10 years, it's actually much harder to change. But again, one way in which we can overcome this adaptation to the excitement is to do something, to remind yourself what you like about your job or why you came here in the first place, or challenge yourself a little bit. So the same psychological processes that are associated with us adapting to good circumstances at work are at play here when we are trying to live a new life after COVID.
Many employers will be listening to this podcast and they will be wondering two things. How do I hold on to the staff? But more importantly, maybe in the new post-COVID world, how do I make sure that we keep going in a really positive way? Everybody's going to come back in and be really happy, just as you mentioned. And we'd be all excited, particularly since we're heading into Christmas. We'll have the Christmas parties. Now, talk to me about next January.
Exactly, yes. The slump. I think that we need to remind ourselves why people are with us in the first place. So, and why we want them to be with us. So we would like everybody to be well within the organization, because nowadays performance is not enough. So people performing or us wanting to asking people to perform is not enough. They need to get something back, which is the well-being. And 5 years ago, there was some fascinating study published by economists, not even psychologists. And it
much better.
Oh, come on. It's the mixture of all that matters. But these economists deal with well-being. And what they found was that when employees are well, so when you actually create a well-being environment for them or activities for them to engage with on a regular basis, their productivity increases by 12% on average, and in some cases, much significantly. So what I would say, what can we do after COVID in order to keep our employees there is, first of all, help them maybe reflect on the past, on the last year, take the best bits and pieces from the last year and for leaders to learn from these experiences and maybe bring them into their daily lives in the post-COVID daily lives. But the most important thing is to keep doing things, because we adapt so quickly. So I would recommend on a regular basis organizing something for employees. This could be some sort of like maybe setting up a strategy that would engage them and enhance their well-being on a regular basis. And we can talk about some of these activities in a few minutes.
Please do, but let me bring you back quite some years when a very large bank that I was working for when I was stockbroking brought me to the North Sea and made me run around with a massive, great, big rubber ball.
Oh, no, no.
Exactly.
I hate these activities.
I loathe them.
I agree.
We're talking about a long time ago, and I could still shudder. That is horse of the highest order. When you say activities, please don't tell me it's about pushing a rubber ball around the North Sea, freezing, wet. Anyway,
No, definitely not. I can imagine. I would be too. And it's really ironic that they are organized to help employees, and so many of us actually experience real anxiety around them, and we don't enjoy them at all, and they certainly do not enhance our well-being. The activities that I'm referring to are more to do with employees deciding what they would like to do in order to live a better life afterwards. So helping, so maybe organizing sessions where with them, like even if during a meeting, a staff meeting, trying to reflect on what has worked for all of us on the team and what we would like to continue doing after COVID. And they could be small things like, for example, working from home more frequently.
Well, let me just hold you there, because we want to get into working from home in a big way. But okay. I do have to take a quick break. I'm talking here to Dr. Joe Burke of NUI Maynooth, and we will take a quick break and we'll be right back after this.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil. The best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide. Backing great women-led businesses on every show.
That Great Business Show.
And talking to me is Dr. Joe Burke of Maynooth University. Dr. Joe, working from home, you were just talking to me about it there. Some people, me included, think we're all going to go back to the office. Now, I love working from home, but I'm seeing the big corporations already saying, you're going back to work. And I don't think that this work from home thing is going to last that long.
I hope it will. And I think that the great thing is that, I suppose it's not great that the pandemic was global, but if we were to look at the silver lining in the pandemic, was that it was global, and that many countries around the world have experienced working from home. And many leaders have realized that actually their businesses could run really well from home. And I'm collaborating, for example, with one organization for the last few years doing research for them, and they have recently told me that they will be making their office, they are renting an office block, and they will be actually looking at an alternative place for them, because they want to have much smaller offices, because the leader has realized that it's working.
Dr. Joe, I am older than you, maybe not wiser, and I'm telling you that in 2 years' time, do you remember your famous 2 years? The fashion will have changed. It'll be all back in the office for two reasons. Because bosses, doesn't matter what their gender or whatever, they want to keep an eye on their employees. And the second thing is collaboration. On the positive side, collaboration in the office does lend itself to creativity and to greater output.
Partially, yes. So, for example,
I love the word partially. That's your way of saying you're wrong.
No. Partially, it is true that we do need that social contact, and we get inspired when we are with others. We get creative when we are with others. We bounce ideas off each other. However, there is also some research saying that actually brainstorming is really great when you're doing it on your own first, and then join the team. So, very good models for brainstorming is to send an email with your ideas to one person, collate all of this, and then together work through some of these ideas and be inspired by producing more.
Dr. Joe, look at my face. I am aghast. The idea of sending me an email with a few ideas on it, I won't read it. But you sit me in a room with two or three people, and I will spend 5-10 hours, I don't care. I love that element of bang, 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 bang. Oh no, this is better. Oh yeah, you're really good there. Yeah.
And I think that this needs to still happen. But when you have an opportunity, some people are, they need to reflect. They need time for reflection. And in an environment such as, for example, a team sitting around the table or on their beanbags, it might not be the place for them. So for you, perhaps it is. Maybe you just got into this habit of doing it. But this was a study that was carried out across various businesses. And it showed that the most effective teams in relation to the type of creativity they've had, we're actually doing work on their own a little bit before the meeting. So doing the reflection, the you know, trying to figure it out in their own heads and then contributing in a group. So I hope that the same way, just going back to your earlier question, the same way as employees need to make sure that they can take the best out of COVID, I think the leaders could perhaps reflect on what type of things they could take. And yes, there is a chance that they will go back in 2 years or whenever to everybody being going back to into the office and just basically nothing has changed since before COVID. But life is constantly changing and businesses need to adjust to the changed circumstances. So I think it would be unwise for business people to go back to the old ways without learning from COVID and what has worked and what hasn't worked.
I definitely have not talked to you about what I'm going to say now. I've only just thought about it. I'm wondering, is the fact that we worry about people being lazy or not working when they're not being watched harks back somewhere to the Bible about the seven deadly sins? Wasn't sloth or something one of those things? Is that we were meant to be? It's one of the things that we shouldn't be doing. I wonder,
Maybe, but it definitely goes back to the very old-fashioned theories of leadership.
But you didn't think you'd be talking about the Bible today.
I definitely was not thinking about that. But I reckon that we were brought up sometimes in environments that would perpetuate this way of thinking. Even when you think about it, even the teachers in school sometimes say things like this about people being lazy and, you know, I have to be there, I have to see you and, you know, don't talk to each other, constantly observing them. And I think some people have learned that this is the way it is, but it is a very old-fashioned way of looking at leadership or at people and a very old-fashioned approach to leadership.
Why? What works?
What works? I guess what works is to know your people very well and know what makes them tick and help them be motivated in whatever way they can.
Well, we had, say, Tony Smurfit on the program back at episode 14, I think, so a long while ago. He has 46,000 employees, so there's no way he's ever going to know them.
Of course.
Now, even at the senior management level, he's got a massive team. Now, there's no way that can apply.
Exactly. So they can't watch everybody. And this is why there needs to be trust. Trust is the foundation for very good working environment. And again, performance. Remember, going back to what I said a couple of minutes ago, when employees are well, when they feel valued, trusted, and they feel good at work, their performance increases. So why would any leader want to decrease their employees' performance by not trusting them and controlling them too much? People are self-governed. We cannot be motivated by somebody pushing us and watching over us.
But is that true? I mean, you go to a football team or something and there is the carrot and there is the stick. That is why that term is there. And some people need, sometimes, not all the time, a kick. And sometimes they need to be motivated by something called cash or some other benefit.
Yes, and unfortunately we get used to this. So there is research again showing us that when, for example, children are offered money for cleaning the house or cleaning the room, once you do it once, you're stuck for life. They won't find the intrinsic motivation as easily as a child that was never offered money for doing these things. So I think it goes back to creating a culture within an organization where employees are trusted when they know that they are that they can do things because they want to do things, they will really push themselves much further. Another very interesting thing in relation to motivation is strengths, allowing people to use their strengths. Research is showing us that when people use between four to seven strengths every day at work, they become intrinsically motivated to their work.
What is the strength that you, as you use it?
Character strength actually is what they were thinking of. And this is basically something that you're really good at. It's different than a talent that we have because you can have talent, but it could be wasted very easily if you don't practice it. Whereas if you have a strength, it means that you have something that you're good at and you keep practicing it. So, for example, organizational skills. If you like organizing things, it doesn't necessarily mean that you will always be organizing things. Sometimes when you are demotivated at work, you might be a really poor organizer, even though you have a predisposition to good organizational qualities. But if you are reminded of it, if you may be appraised on this, you would be much more likely to use it. So for leaders to get to know their employees on a personal level, allow employees to trust them by the employers trusting employees, you could create this lovely environment where employees want to use their strengths, when they want to do their work to a very high level, and then you don't have to push them. You don't need to do anything very drastic to make them do whatever you want them to do. They could actually do something even better because they're self-motivated. That said, you have to get the money off the table. So there has to be a minimal amount of money that employees need to be given for them to feel this way. If they are underpaid, you might need to use
Which means that you have to put the money on the table, not get the money off.
Sorry, I suppose, yeah. And so you are motivated once you have the minimum money that you believe, or intrinsically motivated once you have the minimum money that you need to have.
Another question that I haven't prepared you for, because again, I find what you say so interesting and it makes my head go off and think about things, is do you think COVID made more people, and I'm hoping it has, think that they could go out and work on their own, work for themselves, be themselves, just show what they're good at by working for themselves and being in business on their own?
I think that there may be many people who feel this way, but it doesn't necessarily need to be the case. So my husband is in the construction industry, and they had three people joining their team. One of them was a gentleman who had his own business, and unfortunately, the business did not survive COVID. And as a result, he went back to be employed by others. So I think there are many people that perhaps could not sustain their businesses, unfortunately.
But that's a different thing. That's the economic bang that people get. But I'm just wondering, do they learn from that they now want to say, hey, back to your resilience.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got this. I can do this.
I
don't need to have the man or the woman telling me anymore.
I think that many people would do that, whoever has discovered these talents, maybe during COVID. So for some people, COVID, like I said earlier, they were thriving through it. Good things happened during COVID. There was one guy, for example, who started to draw and he made a business out of it.
That's my point. There you go now. Yeah.
So when people used strengths during COVID, when they've actually used their time to develop or realize what their strengths are and take this time to work on them, then yes, I think for some of these people, it would definitely be a time for growing their own business.
I'm going to take another quick break here, Dr. Jo, because afterwards we will be talking about hobbies and health, I hope. We'll take a quick break.
You're listening to That Great Business Show.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
And you are back to That Great Business Show podcast, where we're having a special chat with a special friend of ours, Dr. Jolanta Burke of Maynooth University. She be one of the world's leaders, I'm going to say that to you, in positive psychology. And as I said at the very beginning, anything she says, peer-reviewed and is factual. Talk to me, Jo, about hobbies and health.
Yes, so this is actually something really interesting that came out of the research that we carried out during COVID. The vast majority of people who were well, psychologically well during COVID, were also exercising a lot and looking after their bodies. And especially during the summer last year, they were going outside for walks a lot. So that was a really interesting finding, because I was hoping, in a way, as a psychologist, that not only physical activity would be something coming up as the main thing, but maybe people started to think differently. They did, but not to the same extent as they looked after their body. So their well-being, overall psychological well-being, was actually related to looking after their health.
I'm hoping that that is something that will stay with us, because I certainly do my 5 or 7K a day without fail for a year and a half.
Wow, well done.
Hey. You mean what you're saying is You don't look like that.
Oh, no, not at all. You definitely look like this. I'm delighted that this is something that you've continued with. But you are not a majority of people, I'm afraid to say, because we did a follow-up research with
leaders.
You've
been very busy during COVID, haven't you?
I was involved in 8 projects during COVID, and all of it was associated with trying to figure out what was happening to people during COVID. But what we did is we've looked at leaders. This is school leaders during COVID, and we measured them 1 week after the school closures. We measured them again 2 months after school closure, and then again 8 months after school closure. Sorry, this was after schools have reopened. So when they went back to the usual day-to-day work, and what we found was that whilst at the beginning they were exercising a lot and looking after the physical health a lot, when they went back to school, they have reduced their physical activity because they did not have the time for it. Many of them did. Now, some of them continued with it, which is wonderful. But it's a great learning for us, even finding this, because it just shows us that, you know, sometimes you were asking me earlier, what could happen to us when we get back to work? That's exactly what could happen. We forget the good things that we have had during COVID.
You, I don't know whether you have a background in science, but I think you may have learned that the natural order of things is minimum energy, maximum entropy. I think is that Pauli's exclusion theory. Are you very impressed with that?
I'm very impressed.
And what that actually means in ordinary language is, we're lazy buggers and we just go for the easy option. And that is what we just tend to do. So the cake is going to be eaten and all the other bad things are going to happen again.
Hopefully not. Hopefully we'll learn. And there are a few things that we can do to learn. And the first thing is actually sitting down and reflecting on what worked for me during COVID. What were the benefits from COVID? Even if you've had a really difficult time, try and reflect on what exactly went well for me. And then come up with ways in which you can introduce this in your future life post-COVID. And all it is about establishing routines. So for example, when we did research with our leaders 2 months into COVID, so many of them were talking about this new routine they've established. And that routine kept them going outside, switching off their mobile phones, all of their devices at 6 p.m. so that they can take some time out. So creating this new routine that would work would be wonderful for the future. But there is one other thing that we need to do, because research is showing us that planning like this is not enough. What you need to do is also think of the potential obstacles for making it happen. So the obstacle could be, for example, I'd be too busy to take a break in the morning. When I was at home, I was taking my regular breaks downstairs, going downstairs with my cup of tea. But going
back to... That brings me back to one of the original chats we had quite some years ago. That was one of the things you said, take a break.
Yes.
Because why? What does it do to us inside?
Taking a break, and we're talking here about this short break even, that less than 10-minute break in the morning is associated with higher levels of well-being within 2 weeks and reduction of burnout within 2 weeks from doing it, from starting
just
to
10
do
minutes.
It. Less than 10 minutes in the morning. This is how powerful that is.
And now, sorry, I have to, you see, as I told you, you sent me off thinking, sorry to be crude, but does going to the loo count as that break?
No.
Okay.
And eating does not count at this break.
Doesn't that? Oh,
having
a cup of tea or something.
Differentiated the nutritional break versus like switch off break, switch your brain off break.
And what do you do?
It could be, for example, going to your canteen and having a quick chat with a colleague.
But not a bicky.
You can have a bicky, but you're not doing it only for the bicky.
Okay.
So the nutrition.
And if I talk to my colleague, sorry, you get me kind of all wired, is that when you talk to your colleague and I say, oh, listen, I was thinking of doing such and such down in Limerick or whatever, you know, your work-related activity, no?
The idea is to switch off from work. So, It's about maybe even checking your Facebook, your Twitter, your whatever other social media you're on. It's about maybe giving someone a call. It's about maybe even reading a book or listening to your book.
Listen to a podcast.
Exactly, yes. listen to a podcast so that you'll switch off temporarily from whatever is bothering you. And anecdotally, some leaders that I have been working with over the years told me that when they started introducing this into their lives, they felt more energized and they kept bringing it into their lives even more. So they actually had more frequent breaks that helped them.
I was going to ask, that was my next question. How many breaks can you build in? Because they're like, one break, good. You could have 10 breaks or 20 breaks, couldn't you?
But no. It's according to research, all we really need for switching off and for having energy in the evening, just one break, less than 10 minutes, and then lunch break. However, some researchers argue about whether that break should be in the afternoon or in the morning, because in some research, they were showing that if you have that break in the morning, you have more energy in the afternoon, whereas others were saying that regardless of whether it's morning or the afternoon, having that get away from everything break is very important. But in addition to this, we should really have lunch. And again, there is arguments between the researchers as to how long should the lunch be. Some people say that it's enough to have 30 minutes, but other researchers mentioned that when you go over the nutritional lunch break, even about 10 minutes, then you have much better rest and energy afterwards.
Does that mean that you finish your sandwich?
And you sit and you do some of the things that I've mentioned earlier.
Not looking at your computer, though.
Exactly. If you want to check other things, then whatever you are working on, then absolutely yes.
See, whatever gets you going. Working from home, it means that you can work through lunch as well, though. Is that naughty?
Unfortunately, and research in the USA is showing us that we work 26 minutes more on average when we are working from home than when we're working in the office. So we have been working sometimes too long. But there were other perks that perhaps we could bring back into our lives if we were to have more balanced work office and home kind of life.
We're going to run out of time, so I want you to give me a few of those brilliant tips. I mean, I love that one about the 10-minute break. Another one that you have gone on about a lot in the past is having a photograph of your kids, if you have kids, or loved persons, loved ones on your desk. Simple as.
To enhance your positive emotions, absolutely, yes.
Mad, isn't it?
It's brilliant this way, absolutely. Another very important one, I guess, is that during COVID, we have become kinder to people. So there's much more kindness. There was much more kindness in Ireland.
It's going to be all over now in a few months.
Unfortunately, if we don't continue with it. So reminding yourself about what you're grateful for, especially when you've had a bad day, and spreading kindness, continue to spread kindness, because kindness is great for people who we give it to, who receive kindness from us, but also for us when we are giving kindness to others. We actually get bigger boosts for it. So continue with that, with these acts of kindness for your neighbors, for your colleagues, maybe when you get back to work.
And you know what's even better? If you do a random act of kindness.
Absolutely, yeah.
And people are not expecting it and you feel considerably better, yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing is, you've got a big long checklist here. You better rattle through them.
I've already mentioned benefit finding activity. So generally speaking, this is a really powerful activity that we can do. And it goes back to writing. Research is showing us that when we have any negative thoughts and we need to get rid of them as quickly as we can, especially when you can't sleep well at night. So writing down your deepest thoughts and feelings, maybe associated with the fear of going back to work, could be useful. But also, instead of writing about your fears or negative thoughts, try and consider what benefits were there, or what benefits have you experienced during COVID, or what are the benefits even of going back to work. So whatever is negative, try to think of the benefits of it. Research is showing us, and maybe this is associated with that adaptation, is that automatically within about 13 months after any negative events, we automatically are searching for benefits, because we need to adjust. Our mind needs to adjust and come to terms with changed circumstances. So we naturally come up with benefits, but we can kind of force this process by asking ourselves, what are the benefits of this situation, even if you're not looking forward to going back to work?
And writing it down.
And writing it down would
work
really well.
Why is the writing important? And I'll tell you why I ask is I learned from Jamie Heaslip, after a match, he would go and write down what happened during the match. Oh. And he wouldn't share it, I don't think. It was kind of like a brain dump.
Yeah.
And he said that that was fantastic for him. It kept him sane.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people say that. A lot of people I know, even therapists, counsellors that work with, that try to prevent a secondary trauma, they write down the things that have happened in the therapy room. I guess, again, going back to research, what it's showing us is that when we have negative thoughts, we need to get rid of them because otherwise they will torture us. The way we get rid of them is however we want to express ourselves is up to us. So for some people, it's drawing, painting. For the vast majority of us, it's writing. And for other people, it's talking. So that's why going to therapy, for example, helps people. But the writing activities, there's one study in the 80s that showed that writing for 3 days, consecutive days, about your deepest thoughts and feelings is an equivalent of going to short-term therapy. This is how useful it is for us.
3 days?
3 days of writing about your deepest thoughts and feelings for 20 minutes. You literally set up your alarm clock for 20 minutes. You write your deepest thoughts and feelings. You don't care about any spelling mistakes. And even one client that I've worked with had dyslexia and she was petrified of the thought of writing. And I said, don't mind the spelling mistakes. Don't even read it back. Throw it away. If they are negative thoughts, don't read them back. But you just need to express them. You need to express them in whatever way you can. But adding to it the positive twist, which is, for example, benefit finding, can help you adjust to the changed circumstances much faster. And in business, what leaders could do is maybe even during your first meeting, when you get back into the office, ask people, What were the good things? What were the benefits of us being away? What are the benefits of us coming back here today? So talk about these benefits.
I'm going to give you one more. And the one thing I know is, because I said this to you the last time as well, you're going to come back. I love this stuff and I think everybody benefits from it.
So many. Which ones will I select?
My goodness. Your next biggest favoritist one, that the one that you say, everybody should know this and nobody seems to know it. There's a very long list just reading through.
Oh, I'm reading through because I'm trying to find the best one. There are so many. I guess...
Okay, have two.
Okay. the one that I've mentioned actually earlier, we have been overwhelmed by devices. And I think that if we could take time out, and I think for so many people, switching their mobiles off, their computers off, and spending more time with others was so crucial. And perhaps when we get...
Go on, tell them what you said to me at night. Switch off the phone.
Oh, that was...
Because you will have...
You will have a much better sleep, first of all.
And
you will have... Am I going to say that? Do you want me to say the real findings?
Yes.
Okay. Basically, what we've done is we've identified that this was an experimental study we carried out, and people who switched the mobiles off for 1 hour for just 1 week had more sex.
There you go. You come to That Great Business Show to learn about a better sex life. How about that?
So they slept much better. They had much higher life satisfaction, many more positive emotions. And all of this was just an experiment for 1 week. So imagine what could happen to us if we continued with this. And when we get back to work, it's really important to set this new routine, identify benefits and try and switch off your mobile phone and enjoy being with colleagues spend a lot of time just rekindling friendships and relationships with others.
Dr. Jo, will you come back, please?
With pleasure, always.
That is Dr. Jolanta Burke of Maynooth University. I just love chatting to you because of simple little things. If we put them into practice, that's the challenge, isn't it? And that is it from That Great Business Show on this, our 40th episode. As always, my thanks to the team here at Dublin South FM Podcast Studios. Sound engineer Alison O'Dwyer is looking more serene than ever as she's already started applying Dr. Joe's tips. The sensei of sound, Peter Rice, will add a measure of calm to us later, guaranteeing we are the world's best sounding podcast. And as a by the way, there's a bit of a thing going on our LinkedIn pages at the moment where Hackettstown and Carlo, Tralee and Kia Ree and most recently Clonakilty in Cork or Vine to be recognised as Ireland's most entrepreneurial town. If you have a view, please do join the conversation. Our LinkedIn page is where you'll also get some bonus materials about the podcast, plus our weekly sneak peek as to what's coming up on the week's podcast. We are in business, so if you are in business, why not tell others about it by advertising on the only business podcast that does business differently. And finally, my thanks to our sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, the world's best shaving oil. Try it for a week, and like me, you will be a forever convert. So for me, Conal O'Moran, until next week, Slán tamall.